On today's episode of On the Clock with Kristen Peek, Overtime Elites GM and head of basketball Damian Wilkins joins us to discuss the four former OTE players in this year's draft, best fit for potential number one pick Alex Sarr, and where OTE stands with the NIL landscape and recruiting moving forward. Let's get into it. Welcome to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. We'll be coming to you each week between the NBA draft lottery and the NBA draft itself with everything you need to know about this year's upcoming class. Today, I'm so excited because we're joined by Damian Wilkins. He's the GM and head of basketball at Overtime Elite. He played 10 years in the NBA and has a rich basketball background spanning over 20 years. Damian, thank you so much for making the time and jumping on the pod. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Before we get into it, I just have to say and give you guys your flowers. I love coming to OTE. Your setup and just your facilities are unbelievable. It's unmatched. It's no wonder that you're seeing the development come from OTE and what it's translating to the NBA and the NBA draft. So obviously, we're going to touch base on that. And then I also want to talk about the four prospects in this year's draft with Alex Sarr potentially going number one. But let's back up. Let's take a backup just in case people don't know what Overtime Elite is. And by the way, people, if you are in Atlanta and you haven't been to OTE, you have to get out for a game. It's such an experience. Even when you guys brought the experience to All-Star Weekend in Indy, I just love it from start to finish. I love working with your team. So if you are in Atlanta and you haven't been to a game, you have to get out. But for those that don't know, what is Overtime Elite? What is your guys' mission? And how do you bring players into the league?
Man, that's loaded.
Just give us the full overview.
Overtime Elite is a high school developmental league. We have eight teams in our league. Year one, we had three. Year two, we had six. And year three, we had eight. And we're entering year four. And we'll likely still have eight teams. We are an accelerated development program. We have our hub, which is in Atlanta, is our baby. And it houses three of our teams, City Reapers, Cold Hearts, and RWE. And then we have five teams outside of our league in different markets, two in North Carolina, one in New York, one in Arizona, and then one in California. And that essentially is what makes up our league. In-house, we have 33 guys, and everything that we do and give to them, all the resources are customizable to them and their respective talent levels and educational levels, all of those things from our academic program to our on-the-court player development to our weight room and health and performance department to our social marketing and branding department. Everything is customizable to each individual player. We have guys here ages 15 to 19, and, you know, we have in a short amount of time, we have a very good, I think, amount of professional basketball alumni already, most notably Amin and Asar Thompson, who went 4 and 5 respectfully in the draft last year. And like you said earlier in the show, we have Alex Sarr, who is a projected number one pick that was at OTE a year ago. Also Rob Dillingham and Ethan Almanza, Tyler Smith, Bryson Warren, and Jalen Lewis are all guys that are putting themselves into the draft this year, who we have high hopes for, and they have high hopes for themselves. And we've been able to help those guys in terms of their foundation and get them going on the right path to professional basketball themselves. And we just continue to just develop and recruit and develop some more, both on and off the court. And I don't think there is any other place in the high school basketball space like this.
I want to talk about OTE and, like you said, just the developmental side of it a little later in the show. Since this is draft focused, I want to touch on four guys. But last year, you know, you mentioned Amin and Asar Thompson, and they went 4 and 5. I had a chance to spend some time with them at OTE. Their developmental minds, the way they see the game, is like it's unlike any other player I've ever been around, both of them. But how is it having both of them during the inception of OTE and seeing their growth over 2 years to be put in the position to be top five picks?
Well, we tell all of the guys that we recruit to come here and our guys here, our constant message is you get out of this what you put into it. I think our resources are endless for that development. I think we have everything that you could possibly want and need to just improve each and every day, right? And for those guys, you know, they had a mindset coming into this thing that they were going to be pros and they were going to be top picks and they were going to be the best players here. And that was their mindset. And that mindset carried on to their work ethic. And then their work ethic just kind of spoke for itself. I think there's something to be said about guys who are that good that also listen to instruction, to a developmental plan, just to all the things that we were able to throw at them to help them get better. There's a humble nature that has to happen and that you have to have and embody to be able to just already be that good and then also say, you're right, I'm not good enough. And those guys did that. I mean, they lived in here. It was times where we had to kick them out of the building. And, you know, because it was just late or it was just like, okay, guys, like there's a game tomorrow. But they just put the work in. And they knew the things that they needed to work on and get better at. And they focused on those things each and every day. And they continued to strengthen the things that they were already good at. And you saw what the end product was in terms of coming out of here. And even now, I can imagine them, even things that I've been told where they are now in Detroit and Houston, respectively, that they are still maintaining that same work ethic and that tenacity towards improvement.
Yeah. I'm a twin myself, so I have a special spot in my heart for Amen and Asar. But with this year, you know, we touched a little bit on Alex Sar, projected number one pick. I think there's going to be a battle between him and Zachary Richaché, who played out of his mind to close out his French season. But Alex Sar, 7'1", French prospect, spent 2 years at OTE. What did you see the most in terms of his growth and development? And how would he fit in, like with the Hawks, your neighbors there in Atlanta?
Well, yeah, I mean, when he came to us, he was a tall, skinny, talented kid who you could see that had all the tools to be very, very special. And, you know, all the things, again, he like Amin and Asar, really attacked his work ethic with, you know, aggression and tenacity and was very intentional about getting better. In particular for him, just getting better in the weight room just to help his aggressive level. But I see he has all the tools that fit today's prototypical NBA player. You know, he's a 7'1 guy who can stretch the floor. He can shoot the ball from three. He can post up. He plays defense. He protects the rim. He has a high basketball IQ. He's just one of those guys that has it all. He's a baby unicorn. And, you know, I liken him to that Porzingis, that Wembanyama type of game. And he has that type of potential. And, you know, Alex is a guy, man, who is also very humble in his development in that he takes constructive criticism very well. And he doesn't take it to heart. He doesn't take it personal. Anytime you tell him he needs to get better or something, he goes out and proves and that he can get better at it and that he's willing to put in the work to get better at it. Kid with a great attitude, comes from a great, amazing family. Obviously, his brother Olivier plays in the NBA and currently trying to stay and stick in the NBA as well. So he has people in his ear that are really good people and helping him through this process. In terms of the Hawks, I think, selfishly speaking, biased talking, whatever the case may be, like I do think he is. Even if the Hawks didn't have the number one pick, if it was someone else, I would still think Alex would be the best pick just because of his ceiling, you know, and his potential and how prototypical his skill level and skill set and frame is to today's NBA.
With Rob Dillingham, another projected lottery pick, Kentucky freshman, came off the bench, was absolutely unbelievable. He was a late arrival to OTE. You know, Donda Academy imploded at Kanye West school, and you guys just kind of took him in under your arm. What was your first impressions of Rob as a player?
Just an unbelievable talent. I mean, just a knack for scoring the basketball. I think he was just born to score. He could score in so many ways. He can handle the ball. And his IG handle says it all, right?
Rob with the shifts.
And he is very shifty. And I think he's one of those guys that is very difficult to guard. If I had to compare him to anyone in the NBA, I would probably say like a Jamal Crawford, a Lou Will type of player who can, you know, come off the bench. I think that's what the genius thing that Calipari did was bring him off the bench so it could be like kind of his show with that second unit group of guys. And I think he can still do those things. He has the talent to do those things at the next level as well. So I'm excited to see where this draft takes him. I know Rob is going to come in and have an immediate impact because of just his ability to score and his unbelievable confidence.
What do you think's the best fit for Rob team-wise? I mean, you've seen it, him being mocked to the Spurs, the Grizzlies kind of leading that secondary unit, learning from Ja, the Jazz are looking for a point guard. What do you think is his best fit?
I mean, listen, I would love to see him in Atlanta too, to be honest with you. But the Spurs would be great, you know, to start your career off under the direction of Greg Popovich is something that I think people probably don't understand how important it is, right? Like he's a guy who can learn a lot in that system. I think playing along with Wembanyama is going to free him up to be able to be more of who he is as well because of so much attention on Victor. But, you know, Rob, he's a plug-and-play guy, man. Like, you just got to give Rob the basketball and tell Rob to go out there and be Rob, and he'll make it happen.
To your point, I was actually kind of shocked in the best way possible that Calipari did let him play freely within his system. And I think he flourished because of that. So kudos Calipari. And I think you're right. Like, he is a plug and play guy. He's going to find ways to impact the game positively. And it'll just depend on, you know, which team wants to look past his size and maybe just the lack of defensive versatility in guarding the backcourt and, you know, take a shot on his offensive upside, I think.
For sure.
moving to Tyler Smith. He's been a little bit of a late bloomer. This is 6'10 swing forward. He kind of spaces the floor well. Did he spend 2 years at OTE before? Okay, so 2 years at OTE, one season with the Ignite, averaged 13.7 points, shot 36% from three last season. I think the biggest thing that stands out to him is his three-point shooting in terms of development, but what has stood out to you just in the time that you spent with him at OTE and where he is now projected as a first-round pick?
I think Tyler is like Ethan. I mean, not Ethan. Alex, Tyler's one of those guys who has all the tools that people are looking for in today's NBA, that long-rangey, versatile player. Like, Tyler can play inside. He can play outside. Obviously, he shoots the ball at a high clip from three. He can pass. He can handle. He's a versatile guy that can just do a whole lot of everything. And someone mentioned to me the other day, and I thought about it, and it does make sense that having him next to a guy like Sabonis in Sacramento, right? Like, having Alex be your four and him your five, and what that can do for a lineup like that. So I think him playing alongside a dominant, you know, big, which is not many in the league anymore, but playing alongside a guy that can help him also play the four and the three at times will be perfect. I would love to see Tyler in somewhere like Minnesota, you know, like playing alongside those two bigs that they have, him maybe being like a small forward type. He can guard the ball. He could just do a whole lot of things. And I think, again, like Rob, he's one of those guys where you can plug in a lot of places and he'll be able to flourish. Tyler has a work ethic, has a skill, and I think if he continues to keep that up, you know, with intentionality, I think he's gonna end up being like, we're gonna look at him as like the steal of the draft.
It's funny you mentioned the steal of the draft, because I think the last guy I want to touch on before we go to a break, Ethan Almanza. I mean, he's someone
Al Horford.
he just looks like an NBA player, you know, but we're seeing him projected more in the second round. I mean, he tested okay at the combine.
Yeah.
I feel like this could be a guy a year or two from now where we're looking back and we're like, he went where? Like similar to how productive we've seen Naz Reid with Minnesota. He went undrafted, even Gigi Jackson this year kind of catapulting into being, you know, a first team all rookie. And for someone, I mean, I felt like you were slept on. You went undrafted and had 10 long years in the NBA. Yeah. But what do you like about Ethan and just how his game projects to the next level that we haven't seen yet?
I just think Ethan plays with a tremendous amount of just poise, patience, and just he doesn't play like he's young, right? Like he plays the game like he's been playing for a while. And every time I watch him play, I can't help but think of Al Horford, the guy that I played with, where he's not, you know, just this physically huge guy, but it's just so impactful in so many ways. And you just, he'll end up winning you a game when you need a game to be won. And he'll make the right plays. He'll make the right pass. He'll make a shot from three. And then you're like, wow, like he can do that too. Like he's a guy that's going to slowly show you everything that he can do. And it end up being super impactful and also turn into like a long, productive career. And much like Al Horford, right? Like
who's still playing, by the way.
Who's still playing. He's old as hell, still playing and still out there making plays and winning games and now has helped, you know, a Celtics team get to the finals. Like, I love Ethan in that way and feel like that he can be that type of guy.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more insights on the current and future NBA draft classes with Damian Wilkins. Welcome back to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, joined by Overtime Elite's Damian Wilkins. We're talking about everything OTE. We touched base on the four main prospects in this draft. I kind of want to dive a little bit more into OTE, the NIL landscape, the future of everything. I mean, this year we saw the Ignite team fold and Adam Silver came out and said, you know, it has a lot to do with NIL and the opportunity that college players are getting. Where does Overtime Elite stand right now in this, you know, post-NIL landscape that we're in? And how are you guys navigating it with different options for players?
You know, I'm sure our parent company, Overtime, when, you know, people are coming to us and discussing NILs, like I'm glad I'm not in those rooms. I want to be so far removed from those conversations because it's just a difficult world to navigate when you have parents and advisors. Parents are coming in there with an emotional component behind their negotiations. And then you have advisors coming
agents,
in there with their agents coming in there with their own agendas as well. And then the player is sitting there too. And it's like, well, I think I'm worth this and I want this. And this is what we have to offer. Like, it's a difficult world to navigate. And again, like I tell guys, our guys that come in here all the time, like, hey, you're going to get better. Like, forget that. That stuff is great. I'm glad they have that. I wish they had it when I was in high school. But, you know, at the same time, I think, you know, we always got to keep the main thing the main thing. And that's probably what I would tell. Well, that is what I would tell all of these guys nowadays.
Are options better or worse for players than they were 12 months ago? With everything you just said,
I think optionality is good. I think the issue comes when people don't truly know how to navigate those options or making poor decisions, you know, based on the options that they have or don't have. Like for me, if I'm a guy right now in high school, I'm gonna pick a college. I'm not picking the sexy college or the big college everyone wanted, all the blue schools that people talk about everyone wanted to go to. Like, if I'm not playing 25 plus minutes a night, like I want to go somewhere where I can play. The goal isn't to stay in college as long as I want to. The goal is to get there, to get somewhere else, right? And you can't do that if you're not playing. Yeah, you can sit on the bench and make a bunch of NIL money, but eventually that's going to run out. I mean, if none of it has truly been, you know, as you know, like NBA money is what's life changing. So like, that's the goal, to get to that. Like, you know, as an adult, we know that $100,000, $200,000, like, I mean, yes, it's good, but it, you know, once a life starts adulting, it ain't a whole lot.
No.
So
it goes real quick.
It goes real quick. So it's like, you know, the goal is to try to get the life-changing money, right? And in order to get that, you got to get on the court and play. And in order to get on the court and play, you got to pick the right situation for you where you're going to get the most minutes and the most out of a school that's going to help you continue to grow and get better, you know, at an accelerated rate, much like OTE.
Yes. I mean, I just have to say, out of any other league or destination in the NIL space, I really think OTE has done the best job adjusting with the climate. Is the future for OTE more of what we're seeing this year and essentially a springboard to either top colleges or other programs overseas, leagues overseas, leading up to the draft? Or do you envision more of a timeline of what Amed and Asar did, staying start to finish at OTE throughout the entire process?
It's hard to tell, you know, because the landscape's always changing. You know, we've changed models twice already, and we've only had three seasons, right? So it's like, we're changing with the times, and like you said, I think we do a great job of adapting to the whatever the current climate is. I think what we do have and that no one else can offer is, again, the level of development that we have here and the attention that we pay to it, the effort that we put behind it, and all of those things. Like, those are, it's unmatched, right? So, yeah, in a perfect world for us, we would love for the NBA to drop that age thing again and go back to guys being able to go out of high school, because that would be great, right? But unfortunately, the collective bargaining agreement says that can't happen or even be thought about for another 6 years, 5 years. So we have to wait on that. But there's still routes that people can take, right? You can come here and be a post-grad, right? And, you know, if you're 19 and 1 year removed from high school, all of those things, we've had that. And I think we have, you know, the best of those options. You know, some guys would like to go overseas and play and take that option as opposed to going to college. You can still go to college out of here. I think coming to OTE gives you literally every option that you can think of. Like, you're able to do everything. But for a lot of guys, overseas isn't an option for them because, like, that's not for everyone. That lifestyle is difficult, and it's long travel. You're far away from home. And, you know, when there's a 12-hour time difference from here to there, or wherever that place may be, like, it's hard to talk to friends and family. I've been there. I've done it. So I know what those challenges are like. And that's why, again, I say, of the options that you have, I think OTE is the best one for exposure and everything.
I remember I talked to Alex Starr. I went over to see him in Australia. And at this point, he was solidified as a top five pick. And I said, Alex, are you going to shut it down? And he looked at me like I was insane. Like, why would I travel 12,000 miles away to shut it down early? No, I'm going to play all the way through. I'm going to develop. I'm going to get the best as I can out of 5-on-5 competition. So to your point, overseas is not for everyone. But when you're someone like Alex Starr, I mean, you have that mindset, you know, you're going to get the best out of every situation.
For sure.
I want to end back to the draft. I think I already know where you're going to go with this, but after the end of every episode, we have a segment called Make the Pick. And since this isn't a Victor Wembanyama draft, this isn't next year with Cooper Flagg coming up, the year after with AJ DeBonsa, so there's no clear cut number one. I think I know what direction you're going to go, but you, Damian Wilkins, are advising the Atlanta Hawks and you're on the clock. Who are you picking first with the number one pick for Atlanta?
I'm picking Alex Starr. I'm picking Alex Starr with the number one pick. I'm not even thinking about any other pick. Now, I may look at my draft board and be like, man, I hope that guy is still there if we have another pick, but I'm picking Alex Starr. I just don't see another pick there. Because like you said, a lot of people say that there's not a clear-cut number one picks, right? But what I think is in this draft that people are missing are guys like P.J. Washington's, are guys like Derek White's of the world, are guys like the Drew Holidays of the world, those guys that like actually are actually really important to winning, right? Like, yeah, you have your stars, and they're going to be stars and do what they have to do, but all stars in on championship teams, have you seen, have championships are won by the best supporting cast. So I think you have some of the best supporting cast people in this draft that you can put around stars and help you guys help win games, help win championships, you know, and help a team be successful for years to come. And I think that's what this draft has that a lot of people just aren't talking about enough, because we get so caught up in wanting the star power. And from that star power, as you know, right, like out of 450 guys in the NBA right now, there's only about 8-9 stars. Like, everybody else is a role player. Like, quite frankly, I mean, some of the best role players in the league are Kristaps Porzingis and you know, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. Like, those guys are role players. Regardless of what you want to say about them, they're still role players. They're not the stars on the team, you know? So it's like, those guys are in this draft right now. And are you going to just say, no, I want the star? Or, because everyone can't have that, right? You need a strong supporting cast to win games. You know, Jaden McDaniels, as good as he played in the playoffs, he's still a role player. And he played his role as well as anyone has played his role and helped Minnesota have the success that they had. So, you know, Rudy Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year, he's a role player, right? Like, you can find those type of guys in this draft, and I think it's something that's unfortunately not being talked about enough.
I know. Well, I love that Sam Presti has been the one that's come out to say, you know, we're all saying this is a weak draft, and he, the one that has successfully rebuilt a playoff team in 3 years, says, I love this draft. There's guys out there. We got to go find them. To your point, yeah. Like, whoever finds that player is going to earn their paycheck this year, because there is no easy answer at this draft. I don't think anywhere in the draft from 1 to 58, you know? Yeah. So, Damian, this has been so fun. I really, appreciate your insight and your time, but that is it for us today. Thank you to Damian for sharing all his insights. And you can follow him on Twitter at DWilkins3000. Follow me on Twitter too at Kristen Peak. Thanks to Brett and Joe behind the scenes to make everything happen. And Whitney Bell from OTE for facilitating this. Jake Fisher and Dan Devine will be back Friday morning on this feed with a new episode of No Cap Room after game 1 of the NBA Finals. Until next week, we are out. Thanks for listening.